I hit le bouton. The for if you ever want to hear any of the previous Dharma punks, certainly for the last couple of years, they're all on the web. If you just type in the Google New York Dharma punks, there's a podcast site, and we have a lot of listeners from all around the world. Actually, somebody in Chile translated a bunch of my talks into Spanish. I have no idea how accurate they were, but the guy was a very super nice guy. And I've since gotten all these Facebook friendship requests from people in Chile. So I have, I'm very big in Chile. My Dharma's top 10 Dharma there. Yeah, that's about it. So, I teach in the Theravadan tradition, which is not really a religion at all. It's a spiritual set of tools that go back 2,500 years that the Buddha provided, giving us ways and methods of dealing with stress. That's all the Buddha talked about, how to relieve our stress, how to find peace. He did not encourage people to convert. He did not, when other members of other spiritual paths came to him, the Jains and the Brahmins of his time, he discouraged them from leaving their groups and just taught the tools that he had. But again, there's no need to think that you have to become a Buddhist or anything. These are just spiritual tools that you can use, if you like, to help reduce the amount of stress and suffering that we cause ourselves. And as the Buddha said, in life there are the first arrows, which are shot into us by the world. People do things that are unskillful, say things that are unwise. We get put into difficult situations, and there's old age, sickness, suffering, death. There's things that we have absolutely no control over, but the bulk of our suffering is not the first arrow, but the second arrow, and third, and fourth, and fifth arrows that we shoot into ourselves, thinking, why is this happening to me? Taking the universal experiences of life, like getting rejected, getting dumped, getting fired, getting having people say unskillful things, we take the universal personally. We say, why is this happening to me? When the truth of it is it's happening to everybody. That's right. So, and then we try to control the inevitables of life. I actually read, there's another set of scientists now who are trying to make human beings immortal using stem cell research. And nowhere in the article where they interviewed the guy, did anybody ask, well, is this a good idea? Nobody ever asked. That idea was to scientists, which just, oh, we have an idea, let's do it. Fuck it. But people will be growing old, sick, dying. As the Buddha said, there will be sorrow, lamentation, grief, despair. We will be separated from the things we love and the people we love. We will be often forced to be with people we don't love. In fact, we don't like very much. And we will often, he said, even not get the things we want. And boy, are we even, as time goes on, we are more and more used to getting what we want, aren't we, as people? So the suffering that's unnecessary that we cause ourselves by taking things personally and trying to control the uncontrollable is what the Buddha was really focusing on. Tools to relieve us of the stress that we bring on. And so many weeks I give tools for dealing with obsessive thoughts. Tonight I'm going to be talking about some of the strategies about dealing with problems. In general, the role that practice has, spiritual practice has, in solving and dealing with problems. Now, there's this tendency that we have to think that I'll practice, I'll get my meditation going and start, you know, going to Buddhist centers and start meditating on a daily basis and start volunteering. I'll start doing that once I get A, B, C, and D settled in my life and solved. Once I get all these challenges and issues and all these things put in their place. And this can be in a global setting or in even just a day-by-day setting. We can prioritize, of course, big issues, projects at work or interpersonal challenges and conflicts. We can all prioritize those over meditating. And there's very often this sense that, to a certain degree, spiritual practice is a luxury. And the Buddha pointed out many times that conflicts are always going on. That if we wait to find inner peace until after we've solved all the challenges and big issues in our lives, we will never, ever, ever attain inner peace. Because the mind is a conflict machine. Not only that, but the world is a conflict machine. So there's a lot of conflict going on in our lives. The Buddha said that the world, he used the analogy was, and this was 2,500 years ago when there was a fuck of a lot fewer people in the world. He said that the world was a drying up puddle with fish flopping about in it, challenging each other for the last little bits of food. That was 2,500 years ago. Imagine what he'd say if he was alive today, when there's, I don't know, 6-7 billion people on the planet. So, especially in human civilization, which prioritizes individuation and this is mine, this is what I own, that type of thinking, taking all the things in our lives in terms of our possessions, etc., there's endless conflict. There's always been conflict. There's always been wars. There's always been famine. There's always been horrible, horrible events. And as we'll see, none of spiritual practice is about turning our back on doing what we can. But I'll say, first of all, if we try to solve all of the world's problems without taking care of ourselves, we won't get very far. We'll burn out. The world is filled with people who started out with very compassionate, generous spirits and then get overwhelmed by the amount of suffering they encounter and just give up. And the reason is because we don't take care of ourselves. We don't cultivate peace. We don't give any priority to making sure that while we're trying to be helpful in the world, that we also take time to practice developing inner peace within. Not only through meditation, but just through mindfulness, as we've talked about throughout the day, checking in the body, making sure the body's relaxed, the breath feels good, trying to, wherever possible, to forgive where we've had running conflicts, and practicing generosity, practicing virtue, not stealing or causing harm, even though we feel we have the right to. All these things are extremely important practices to sustain a very compassionate approach to the way we engage with the rest of the world. In fact, if you've ever gone to any panels or discussions on engaged Buddhism, all of the discussions always revolve around how important it is. And Buddhists are very engaged, active people in trying to address the world's challenges. We've had many Buddhists come through who are working with orphans and poverty and malnutrition. But all of them talk about how important it is to take care of themselves, because if you don't, we get burned out. So it's really important to realize that we're not going to solve all of the, not only the issues in the world, but certainly all of the conflicts and issues in our personal lives. Now, there's this also this tendency to get stuck in a lot of our challenges and conflicts over and over and over again, getting worked up into obsession, where we have the inner debates of the to and fro's. What will happen if we dump somebody from our lives, or we dump a job, or we dump this or that, or we stick with someone or some job or whatever, or how we want to tell off somebody in our minds, or we want to get even, or if only somebody knew our what we were experiencing, they'd act differently. There's all these this tendency to work ourselves up. And when we're overwhelmed at work with projects, we tend to carry in our heads all of our to-do lists, which is glorified as multitasking. Whenever I see any job notice that says should be good at multitasking, that's my hint to go nowhere near. Because what that job is saying should be good at stressing yourself out and bringing complete lack of inner peace to your life. But whatever, that's just me. So, but anyway, we tend to take the same approaches of worrying, obsessing, arguing in our head back and forth, fantasizing the worst possible outcomes of interactions, all these types of strategies we tend to use over and over again until, as one Ajahn I study with says, our mind gets very dull because we're not using all the tools that are available to us. So what are some of the tools? The tools I'm going to be talking about, and one specifically, but Yoniso Manasikara, which is appropriate attention, Sangha Nusati, which is seeking advice from other wise practitioners. There's Sila, which is virtue, my mindfulness. Sati, I meant to say, mindfulness. And then the most, what we're talking about focusing tonight as a strategy is Samadhi and Kanti, which is practicing patient pauses in life, where we put down whatever obsessions or whatever conflicts or issues or problems we have to deal with, and bringing our attention inwards. Let me talk about some of the first three first, just to inform you what they are. Appropriate attention means just without reacting to the issues in our lives, just watching them as they arise and see what these thoughts and these challenges do to us. Just notice the effect that they have on the breath, they have on the body. Notice how the mind collapses around it. And the Buddha referred to the mind tends to do things called saraga, sadosa, and samoha, which means the mind tends to become very claustrophobic and collapse around thoughts that are about wanting something, not wanting something, or about anything that has to do with ourself, our self-centered thoughts. What do people think about me? What's going to happen to me? How do I relate to other people? This is mine, that's not yours. Those kinds of thoughts. So those three kinds of thoughts, the things I want, I don't want, and all what's happened to me, tend to make the mind really collapse. And when we notice it and don't allow the mind to collapse around these issues, we tend to get different perspectives. It's also part of appropriate attention to see what the issues and debates and challenges and obsessions we have, what we are trying to, what they're offering to us, what we think we're getting by worrying about them all the time. One of the things I've noticed with worry and with going to the worst possible outcome of any different situation, my mind informs me before I go to the doctor that I have cancer all the time. It doesn't matter. I could be going to an ear doctor and I'll have cancer. And I realize that it's because that worrying and projecting bad outcomes gives me the illusion that I'm prepared, that I'm somehow safer, and that I'm somehow prepared. Now, part of Yoniso Manasikara is noticing that and then reflecting on, does this tendency of mine really work? And when I reflect, I see, well, actually, most of the times, the really shitty things that have happened to me in my life have happened without any forewarning. No matter how much my mind likes to worry, I've never figured out any of the bad shit that's happened. And also, Yoniso Manasikara is also about reflecting, have there been other tools that have worked? And in my case, I've noticed that when bad shit has happened, I've had, we've all had our in life our fair share of it, I've noticed that I've done completely fine without worrying or stressing out beforehand. In fact, when I'm caught off guard, I tend to act pretty well because I'm not all stressed out about it. I'm not all worked out. I tend to be open and I tend to seek help. It's generally when we're caught up in worry and trying to figure out life that we stress out the body because we're unaware of it. We tend to, when we're trying to figure out things, we tend to breathe in a much shallower way. So the entire underlying experience we bringing into life is much more tense. And the more tense we are, the more focused we are on the more world, the more reactive we are, and the more the striatum is engaged, a part of the brain that's much more habitually prone. We tend to go back again and again and again to our defensive, reactive, ingrained habits. We're not open to other solutions. So we're much better off, in fact, when we don't worry. And this is what Yoniso Manasikara shows us. Now, I can tell you, as that pop song did, don't worry, be happy, and a fuck of a lot good it's going to do. It won't do any good. You have to yourself experience seeing the results of a line of thinking, a conflict, and worrying about an issue, see what it offers, see if it works, and then see if other strategies work. That's what the Buddha talked about in his teaching to the Kalamas. Don't believe what I say. Put these tools into practice for yourself, and if they don't work for you, don't use them. Only use what works for you. So that's appropriate attention. Seeking wise helps pretty much speaks for itself. It's a great way to turn things over. If we're caught up in a debate in our head about what to do about something, should I keep my job? Should I quit and move to Maine? Should I don't know why I said Maine. That seems like a... Why the fuck Maine? Vermont. Portland. Portland. Portland seems nice, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Quit my job. Throw in the towel. Move to Maine to a hippie commune. Maybe not me, but you can do that. I mean, we get caught up in these debates, and there's asking, turning it over by asking wise people, well, here's what I'm thinking about. What would you do? I got so much out of my mind by going to people that I know have wise spiritual practices and just say, you know what, I've just talked myself into a circle here. I'm willing to try your solution. The reason that generally tends to work is because I'm often terrified by the problems of my life, but you're not terrified by them. Same thing for yours. I'm sure that your problems seem insurmountable and terrifying, but whether or not to see your mother over the holidays doesn't scare me in the slightest. I can answer that question with a little bit of background without any hesitation. You might, however, get yourself locked up into a 12-hour back-and-forth obsessional, unable-to-sleep loop. So it's a very helpful way to turn it over. Three, upekkha, which is balance, which means there's sometimes in life that there's challenges that we can't solve right now. There are people we can't help right now due to their previous karma or our previous karma. And part of balance is being willing to put aside a challenge and go to a challenge that we can work on right here and right now. We might not be able to help a friend who's an alcoholic or hitting a bottom. They might not be receptive to us, but there might be somebody else that we can help. That's where upekkha or equanimity comes in. Reflecting, is this something that is really showing any results when I think and work on it? Or is there some other area that I can be focusing my mind? mindfulness, sati, means relaxing the body and noticing if the breath is comfortable no matter what problem we're working on. That alone makes us so much less reactive, as we've already talked about. Now, the big topic or the big tool tonight is samadhi, which means literally taking a sacred pause and entirely putting something aside and bringing our attention fully within and fully bringing peace and calm within. And this for us is the scariest of all the tools, because all those other tools I talked about, appropriate attention, balance or upekkha, mindfulness or asking someone for a spiritual person for advice, those all keep the problem in our minds. The challenges are still there. We're aware of them. But this is literally saying, you know what, I cannot deal with any of these issues right now. I'm going to take a pause from life for a moment and bring my attention fully within. And this is often very scary. But it brings to mind a wonderful story that my teacher Ajahn Jeff talks about. He had a friend of his who used to go around and ask people this question. Suppose you were dreaming, and in your dream, you were with a bunch of people, including people you work with, etc., and a bandit comes up to you and says, I have to rob you, and I'm going to kill one of your party. You choose which one I'm going to kill. Would you choose the old person, if there's an old person, the sick person, the irritating person, etc., etc., etc.? This is actually based on a very old Buddhist proverb. And most adults will work on it, and they might say, well, I'd say myself, thinking that that's the virtuous answer. Or they'll think maybe the really old person is about to die. But when he would go around and ask children, invariably they would say, why don't you just wake up? That sounds like a bad dream. And that's actually what meditation does. It wakes us up from the bad dream that we're often living in. Because when we meditate, when we stop thinking, and we stop the dramas in our heads, and we come to the breath and the body, we tend to realize how many of the issues we're worrying about are actually not happening right here and right now. So many of the times we're caught up in all the things I have to do, the things we actually have to do, we can't do right now. So many of the debates we have with other people, the other people aren't even here. So many of the worries about the future, we can't address them because they haven't happened yet. Or the fixations on the past, those are dreams too. When we wake up to the present, we find that so many of the challenges and issues that we were carrying around immediately vanish, like bad dreams. Now, there are occasionally, of course, real conflicts. And those are often addressed by the other tools, but they'll still be there when we return from our meditation. But when we return with a different perspective, we often can do sneaky things like change the conditions of the argument. For example, Einstein said that when he was caught in one of his theorems that he couldn't figure out, he'd put it entirely down, take a walk on the beach, and when he returned, he'd always change something that he thought was a given that he couldn't change. And then he would work out the problem. For example, sometimes in life we think, well, I have to be a spiritual creative person, but I have to make a living. And we go back and forth between the two. Should I quit my job or should I, should I do my creative work? And it doesn't occur that there's other possibilities. There's finding work that's not full time. There's going and changing the hours that we work, changing jobs. There's changing the times that we do our creative. There's changing the conditions of the argument. But we don't see that we're taking things as givens until we put them down. When we are caught up in a debate back and forth in our minds, one of the Buddhist monks I've studied with calls that the endless legal case, where no matter what settlement we reach in our mind, the next day the other side will always appeal the verdict. It's like in real legal cases where a just verdict can be found and still there's going to be one jerk out there who will still appeal. I read that there's somebody who's suing Julian Assange, the guy behind WikiLeaks, for millions and millions of dollars, saying that by leaking American military plans, he's now finds it difficult to sleep at night. So he's suing Julian Assange for millions and millions of dollars, and actually it's very possible that he could keep the WikiLeaks founder in court cases for years and years and years, because he can continue to appeal and appeal and appeal and appeal. Even though it's so obviously the work of an insane person, it still can be appealed. It's the same thing with the debates in our minds. If we think the solution is going to come by keeping the two givens that we're debating between, we'll find that one, the other side that we find against always will appeal. So there's always a different approach. Another interesting thing, a couple of interesting notes that the Buddha said about this approach, besides bringing a new relaxed body and a new relaxed inner peaceful place to these things, is when we find peace within, somehow the events in the outside world, especially our personal outside world, the conflicts we have with others, they tend to seem a fuck of a lot less important. Because when we find that we have access to a source of great inner peace within, we tend to get less bent out of shape. It's also one of the reasons why the Buddha was so bent on reflecting on mortality. Rather than being an unskillful or bummer to think, well, actually our time is limited, it's actually generally a very refreshing change in perspective when we realize that we only have so much time. And is this argument, debate, conflict, is it really worth getting caught up and bent out of shape about? We have, in our tradition, the year to live practice, where people take a practice as if they have a year to live. It was very funny. When we started that practice, a bunch of people would hear Dharma Punk share, "Hi, my name is blah, 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 and I have 3 months to live." And after one talk, somebody came up to me and he said, "Well, it's so wonderful but sad that so many of your Dharma Punks people are dying at such a young age." And so I explained that it was actually a practice on actually letting go of so many of the conflicts and putting our life back into perspective. So these are some of the tools that we get when we bring our awareness to meditation and spiritual practice. We bring these new perspectives to it. Finally, I'll close by saying that the Buddha noted that the conflicts in life through samsara repeat themselves over and over and over again. You don't have to go back and address any great injustice that's happened to you in an interpersonal conflict. That conflict happens over and over and over again. The root source is that people are looking for happiness in the wrong place, and they're taking things far too personally, and we're generally getting well too caught up in what he called I, me, mining. So when we find that we can drop our side, when we can let go and not try to score points over other people, which never, ever, ever bring us any peace. If you want to practice Yonisa Manasikara, reflect on some big argument in your past where you think you've won the argument and ask yourself, did that bring you everlasting peace and harmony in your life? Did all conflicts dissolve after that? You'll find, no, that when we win a point or win a debate or win a screaming match or win a conflict or whatever, that we wind up with another conflict soon after. It's the same thing with all the big, huge problems and challenges we face in life. The moment we solve them and we fix them, guess what? Another one pops up. So we don't have to solve the future problems or the past problems if we learn to practice these tools right here and right now and to use them effectively. We'll have tools that can work on any problem and any challenge that we ever face. And once again, that's not only getting caught up in our endless obsessive worrying, but also practicing appropriate attention, seeking wise counsel, upekkha, which means putting aside challenges that we can't deal with and focusing on other challenges that we can deal with, mindfully relaxing the body, cultivating peaceful thoughts, and then finally, entirely giving ourselves a sacred pause where we give ourselves permission to just put everything aside, breathe, bring a source of inner peace to our life, and then return and see if we can change the things that we're taking for granted in our internal debates. So that's some of the Buddha's tools for solving problems in life. I hope you got something from tonight's talk, and now it's your turn to ask any questions, and we'll do that for about 15 minutes, and then we'll close. So it's your turn now to ask any or talk about anything that comes to mind. Thank you for listening. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for the talk. I don't know if this is related or not. I've heard referenced choice.